Davis Van Opdorp here with Stefan Biankowski and Ross Dunbar. Stefan Biankowski, you can reach him at S. Biankowski, and Ross Dunbar at Ross Dunbar 93. Myself at Davis underscore Van Opdorp. Thank you for all of you guys out there that are watching on Twitter right now. It's a new thing that we're trying. And we're going to do our predictions for the second half of the season. The way that we're going to do it is we have three different predictions. One that we are definitely sure is going to happen. One that we're have like a 50-50 feeling that we're gonna it's going to happen. And one that we're really going out on a limb to that we think is going to happen. And the ones that are out on a limb, be sure to criticize us for them, because I think that's what, and make sure to hold us to it too, because that's what makes it this part kind of
fun. They always do.
So for those of you who are watching on Twitter, if you want to give your own predictions throughout the show, we more than welcome you to do so, and I'll be able to see your responses on my computer. So just fire away. All right, so Ross, do you want to go first? What's your first prediction for the second half of the Bundesliga season?
So I'll open up my magic book, my book of wisdom. I'm going for a definite first. And this is actually quite ballsy, right? So there could be a lot of hate. I think you can always tell at this point in the season which teams are either on a total decline, which teams are kind of like in the middle, and which teams are kind of on the up. And I think if you look at Ingolstadt, for example, I have a piece coming out this week, by the way, so keep your eyes peeled for that. Shameless plug. I think Ingolstadt have a good chance of staying up. I think there's a real plan about that team. I think the new manager who's come in has done really, really well.
Well, hold on. Of course, give us a hint as to your amazing column about Ingolstadt. Why are Ingolstadt going to stay up?
I didn't see why they're going to stay up, but I think they've got a chance.
Okay.
They've got a good chance. I don't think
right now. But you're saying right now that Werder Bremen's going to go down.
One of them's going to have to go down, right? If Darmstadt or Ingolstadt is not going to. If one of those teams stay up.
Yeah, you can have 18 teams in the league.
Yeah, someone's going to have to go down. I just think with Werder Bremen, the defensive issues haven't been rectified at all.
No.
They have had the worst defensive record in the league for the last three or four seasons.
Sure, and they stayed up each time.
Yeah, but that's because the teams in the league were very, very bad. This year, I don't think it's like that. I think the quality of team in the league is pretty good. For example, if you look at Hamburg and how they have improved, they're not the kind of cannon fodder we saw last year. Mm-hmm. But with Bremen this year, defensively especially, you know, they're conceding a ridiculous amount of goals. I'm interested to see how Thomas Delaney shows up the midfield. But even in attack, they're not scoring a ridiculous amount of goals. So, unfortunately, I don't think they're going to have enough points to stay up. And especially when you look at the teams who have gone down in previous years, really Stuttgart really got relegated last year with the quality of play that they had. I just think Werder Bremen this year are going to find it really, really difficult. And that's largely because I think the other teams will pick up in the second half of the season.
That's really interesting. So basically what you're going with is you're saying that Ingolstadt are going to leapfrog them. That's essentially your justification for it.
Let me give a little table context with that too, because Hamburg and Ingolstadt right now are behind Werder Bremen. Werder Bremen's on 16 points, tied with Wolfsburg and Borussia Mönchengladbach, believe it or not. Hamburg are 3 points behind with 13, Ingolstadt with 12. So you think that in the second half of the season, one or both of those teams is going to...
I think Hamburg will stay up. They've got a good manager. They've actually got a semblance of an actual properly running organisation now. They've made some interesting signings in January with Papadopoulos coming in on loan, if he stays fit, of course, and Mavraj coming in from Cologne. So they've got some really solid defenders now to build on. So I'm really interested to see how they do in terms of, you know, can they get maybe towards the top half. But I just think, look at Bremen right now, and I think, are there any teams in the league who are poorer than Werder Bremen right now? Darmstadt, Ingolstadt, possibly.
See, I would argue that actually Werder Bremen's attack is maybe better than any of those teams.
Yeah, see, I was going to mention Serge Gnabry as the obvious.
Serge Gnabry and the fact that Pizarro and Cruz are
also... But they're relying on one player.
Well, three.
No, I just named three.
Pizarro's not scoring goals, though.
No, but he's
Cruz is not scoring goals.
Cruz only just got back. Yeah.
And
yeah,
so does Pizarro, so I'm...
But they're relying on a couple of players.
Yeah, whereas Ingolstadt, those are three players that Ingolstadt don't have.
No, but Ingolstadt has an attack that's ninth best in the Bundesliga statistically.
And how's the defence?
Defending the defence that bad.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fair point.
I'm just making the point that they're not relying on one player; they're relying on two or three players to work together. And I think they've got a good tactical plan. It's actually interesting to watch. I'm kind of like giving away my article now on Ingolstadt, but don't want to digress too much. don't digress too much, but they've got a tactical plan in place, whereas I don't think Werder Bremen do. I don't think there's a cohesion around how they want to play. It seems to me like it's very high risk, wherein the rewards aren't really there, so it's high risk, low reward type of thing. But I think with Hamburg, I think Hamburg are definitely good enough to stay up. So really, you're going to say, well, Mönchengladbach gets sucked into relegation trouble? I don't think so. And I actually think Wolfsburg have done pretty well this window. So I think in comparison to the last two or three years, where it was a case of there were three or four really bad teams, this year I think there was maybe only one or two.
Yeah, because you've had Freiburg and Leipzig who just
showed up so well. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So Werder Bremen staying up. That's Ross's.
Well, Werder Bremen to get relegated.
Oh, sorry, Werder Bremen getting relegated. I don't want to misquote. Sorry, I didn't mean to misquote you there. Werder Bremen getting relegated. That's his.
It's
your safe bet.
You do know if it don't
you're pretty sure
there,
about
I'm just
that.
Going to take your audio there. So that's what I said.
Yeah. Okay. Stefan, what are you the one that you're 100% sure you absolutely think is going to happen?
Well, Ross kind of actually touched on it. I've gone with Hamburg will stay up. I'm convinced of it. Which isn't as ballsy as saying that Werder Bremen...
Well, I mean, that's why you're sure about it.
It's not as ballsy as saying Ingolstadt will stay up, but... Mm-hmm.
That was a definite. That's a definite prediction that Werder Bremen will be relegated.
I know. I was saying it's not as ballsy as Ingolstadt. But yeah, I mean, again, what Ross has said, echoed, is kind of annoying that you actually kind of made half my points, but largely it's down to Marcus Gisdol, I think. I think he's a really competent, decent Bundesliga coach. I think the changes that he's made since he came into the club are night and day. I think not that Labadie was a bad coach by any means. He obviously did the job. He kept the team in the league, a really respectable position actually at the end of the season. But I mean, they won three of the last five games going into the winter break. Mm-hmm. They were unbeaten in six of the last 10.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, that doesn't sound amazing, but for a team at the bottom of the half of the season, that's really good. And it was actually showing. In fact, the winter break may have came at a really bad time for Hamburg because they're really getting into the swing of things. Now, I knew they were desperate for a defender or multiple defenders.
Oh, multiple
over,
defenders,
over
for sure.
Winter break. They wanted like three or four, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They got Papadopoulos in, who people who listened to our preview podcast were talking about. Actually, it wasn't even the preview one. It was maybe a few weeks after when he signed for Leipzig.
I think it was our transfer pod, to be exact. But anyways,
we said he's a good player. I think Papadopoulos is actually a really solid defender. He's not. Yeah. He doesn't have the mentality or the concentration to play a very top team. I think you and I actually watched him in that Leverkusen Porto friendly at the start of the season, and he looks solid, but sometimes he turns off. But for a team like Hamburg, who are desperate for defenders, he works. They've also signed Mavraj as well from Cologne, who I think is a solid player as well. So the defence was the one thing they had to sort out. I think I wouldn't say they're home and dry in that regard, but they have sorted out to a certain degree. The rest of the team seems to be coming together quite well. And under Gisdol, I was actually really tempted to go ahead and say they'd finish top half, but I didn't because...
That would have been
I'll step back from the edge. I think they're going to quite comfortably finish above the relegation.
I was thinking about what I was going to do for a moderate one. And one I was thinking about was that Marcus Gisdol, who signed just one-year deal, is going to sign a multi-year contract after the season after he keeps Hamburg up.
Mm.
So having Hamburg up, I think they're one of the teams that's down there that actually has a lot more quality than the teams that they're grouped with. Mm. Even with teams like Gladbach in there too.
Yeah.
I mean, for Hamburg, I thought was going to be a team that was going to compete at the highest level. So I think that Gisdol like you said, the right coach, and the fact that they got rid of a guy like Emre Spahić, who was a player that they were desperate for a season and a half ago, I think that's a very strong sign for who's the new
Jens Todt.
He's Jens Todt, the new sporting director who came in. I think that's a very good sign.
I completely agree with you. I mean, Gisdol really had two massive things to sort out. One was the lack of goals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know you talked about the defence first off, but I think the lack of goals that Hamburg have had quite consistently over this season was a real problem. Even under Labbadia, they weren't scoring. And I think he's definitely sorted that out. You know, certainly with Nikolai Müller, Gregoric, they're getting goals from different areas of the pitch now. Second thing I think is huge is the mentality.
Yep.
That was a club that was short of confidence. Mm-hmm. And you could see in those players that they just did not have the mentality to keep bouncing back all the time. It was so many setbacks.
Yep.
And you look at a player like Kyriakos Papadopoulos, for example. Now, I don't think that boy has a confidence problem at all. I really don't.
He's terrified.
I've heard of stories that when the ball's up in the air and it's going for a header, he'll shout boo. he's got that aggressive mentality that I think Hamburg really needed. I think the change of captain has been a fantastic decision, even though Sakai doesn't want that responsibility. But I just think the mentality is beginning to change, and I think I agree with you. I think Hamburg can stay up.
That's a good shout that Hamburg are going to stay up. But obviously, like I said, they're in 16th place. They're only a point off of Ingolstadt, but I think I agree with you that they're better than the team. They're better. They're too good to go down, I think, at this point. I know at some one point in the season I said that they probably should go down, but I think that with they've actually made the changes that they probably would have made if they had gone down in the second division. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a good shout. Mine is, I actually talked about this earlier in the season. I'm going to stick to my guns, and I'm pretty sure that this is going to happen, and that's Cologne is going to finish out of the European spots. You see how they ended. They had a great start to the season, and I think a lot of fans were buying in. And I think that is why I tried to pump the brakes at the time, which was they were relying on one scorer. Mm-hmm. They were they have a very conservative mindset about them, and that a team that has like such a and that's fine to have. I'm not saying that's a bad thing to have, especially for a team that struggled with relegation not too long ago. But to pick them to finish in a European spot or finish even in the Champions League, which they were in the Champions League spots at one point. I think that that Cologne is going to come back down to earth just a little bit. I think Anthony Modeste has already come back down to earth already. I think that he's going to. He did have a scoring drought last year as well, so I wasn't really surprised that he scored less after having the ridiculous goal scoring form that he had. And especially if he's the only guy that you're relying on to put goals in the back of the net. I know that they have Yuya Osaka, but you can't rely. He's a second division striker.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think it's a fair point. Good argument to make. I mean, the only thing I would say is that right now you have three or four teams in that top bunch at the top of the league who are there on merit. It's not a fluke that Hertha Berlin, Cologne, Frankfurt, Hoffenheim are there. I mean, we'll talk about Dortmund a little bit later, but I mean, really, it's a case of will a team drop off like Hertha did last year. I mean, Hertha were there on merit at the start of last year, and they totally dropped off. I mean, it's like a ridiculous decline. I'm not sure this time around that any of those teams are going to drop out as
well. Hertha were
more dramatically
critically
as that
because
time.
Of injuries though as well.
Yeah. So if you lose one or two players, I mean, obviously now with Mavrash going to Hamburg, will that change the defensive structure a little bit? Because the three at the back system has actually worked really, really well. Mm-hmm. They're not giving away a lot of shots, they're not giving away a lot of chances. So I'm curious to see how that works out, but I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I think even when they were really kicking ass, I think the very best of times they were still saying, yeah, it's a good defence with Modeste up front. And I think that's relatively fair to say. Modeste's goals have slightly dried up a bit, and I think this is always what's going to happen. Of all the underdogs this season who have surprised people, I think Cologne were probably easily the least equipped to go the long haul. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Hertha have a bit more about them. Mm-hmm. Hoffenheim probably have a bit more about them. Actually, Hoffenheim definitely do. And Frankfurt are actually kind of similar in that regard, but I think they're maybe a tighter unit. Yeah, for the last couple of seasons now, Cologne have always had that defensive solidity. And then Modeste came in and finally added a bit more, which is why they shot the league. And I don't know, there's not many strings to their bow.
Well, you also look at the teams that they have to play. They actually played a lot of really good teams at home in the first half. And now they're going to have to go to Leipzig after drawing against Leipzig at home. They're going to have to go to Dortmund after drawing with Dortmund at home. And they have to face Bayern again after they got a point in Munich. But you can be darn sure that Bayern Munich are going to make sure that they don't draw in Cologne and not get something.
Yeah, sure.
Cologne.
No, of course. But on both, you can make an argument for both cases. You know whether the home advantage is going to count or not. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that makes much of a difference. I think going to Leipzig and Dortmund might actually suit their style of play. I think.
True. That's true.
Less pressure, it's a back to the wall kind of performance.
But it's still players getting out of their comfort zones, going somewhere else. Yeah. You know, it's much different when you play at the same city that you train in.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously that's just a universal thing, and that's nothing new. But I'm just saying that they played some really good teams at home, and they were able to hold them off. And I felt like that's what it was, that they were holding these teams on.
I think a bit like Hertha, perhaps, if they lost Ibisevic. I think if Cologne were to lose Modesta, then they've got problems. I think that would be a serious concern if they don't have the kind of strength and depth that they need to finish in the top four.
So do we agree with Davis?
No.
You think they're going to stay?
I think they'll finish in the European places, yeah.
No, okay. I agree with you. I think they're going to drop off as well.
Okay, not too much. I mean, they finished in eighth last year, so I think that they'll drop off just enough to get down to mid-table.
I mean, we'll probably talk about this more as we go on, but I think, especially when I went back to the league table this, you know, today to try and do a bit of research for the show and put together some predictions. Like,
well, you actually did some research.
I know, for a change. Wow. That top half of the table was really, really tight, and there's teams like Schalke and Leverkusen are still to really get.
Yeah, Leverkusen, by the way, is behind them, and if they figured it out like they did the second half of last season, that, I mean, who knows if they will? Yeah. But if they do, they definitely have the potential to do that.
Yeah,
you know. And they get Cologne at home, although that's not really a road game for Cologne, because, I mean, they could probably take a train there if they wanted to. So now we're going to kick it up a gear. We're going to go to the predictions that you're more 50-50 on than a completely sure. So, Ross, what's this prediction that you're 50-50 on?
It's actually moving away from the clubs. I think, obviously, there's a lot of talk about Mario Götze. There's a lot of talk about this guy being the next wonder kid, and now his performances maybe haven't been at the level that we expected. I think in this year, 2017, will be the year that Mario Götze comes back to becoming a world-class player, to being a top level player, like as in one of the best in the league.
Ooh, that's a big call.
Mario Götze will be world-class by May, is what you're saying?
No, I said across this calendar year.
Okay.
2017, I think he'll be back at the top level. Not the type of player that he was, because, you know, he's not the same number 10 as he was when he burst through. Mm-hmm. He's more of a kind of dynamic number 8 kind of player now. And I think that by the end of the year, possibly even by the end of the season, I think we'll be looking at Mario Götze as being at the really top level. You know when, you know, Kicker did that international in class thing? I think you see Mario Götze in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think his development is going in the right direction. I think physically he looks in a really good shape. I think this winter break was at the perfect time because he actually started to find some rhythm. So he's now been able to, you know, work on his fitness, you know, actually refine his tactical role in the team. And I think, you know, they'll obviously be interesting to see how Dortmund do in the Champions League, but I could see him really hitting the ground running this year. But I mean, it could go either way. I mean,
but he's still young enough for sure.
Sure, of course.
I mean, it's not like, and I mean, Tuchel, he's now had also 6 months with Tuchel. Mm. And Tuchel is, he usually has his guys, and he's gotten a lot of playing time under Tuchel as well. And he's in terms of, if you look at Mario, I mean, Tuchel called him out in the middle of the season saying he needs to get more out of Mario Götze and Ander Schürrle. But if you look at those two transfers that cost him just transfer fees, cost 56 million euros, that Mario Götze, I think, is the more showing the more promise to return in than Ander Schürrle.
Well, I think we talked about it at the time. I think maybe we all agreed that this maybe wasn't sensible transfer business because there wasn't a lot of evidence from his time at Bayern that his development was going in the right direction. Now Tuchel has obviously kind of tried to usher him towards a certain style of play, a certain position on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you look at Dortmund's performances this season, they've really struggled to break teams down like Frankfurt, like Cologne, like Hertha, because they don't have those players who can really really perfect this positional play. They can't, you know, they can't combine with other players technically because they're not good enough. I'm looking particularly at Sebastian Hoda and maybe at the beginning Dembele. Now obviously now it's different times. He's very good now, but at the start he wasn't the type of player who suited this system, whereas I think the two real key players for this Dortmund team are Guerrero, obviously, who's coming back now, and Mario Götze.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to make the point that you said that Tuchel's actually said he has to get more out of Götze, which I think is relatively fair. I mean, I think in select games Götze has really stood out for Dortmund.
Yeah.
The one that stings in my mind is obviously the game against Bayern, where he really was fantastic. But it's interesting that, because what you're suggesting is you need to make a really big step up and become the key man.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, all the tools are there for him to do that, because if you look at that Dortmund team, there's not really, outside of Bamiyang, and maybe when Marco Reus comes back to play his 5 games a season, there's no one in that role that Götze plays that can stand up. And there is that kind of Götze hole in the middle of the team in that number 10 role. I mean, who have you got there? It's maybe Castro. I know
maybe Kagawa, but even that, I mean, that's even that's not. I mean, I think you're right that Mario Götze is the only option in that position.
Yeah,
it depends really whether his fitness is kept up or he's got even better over the winter break, and just how Dortmund will play in general. Because we'll talk about it later on, I'm sure. But like, I think there's a lot of problems across that team, and it's a lot to ask Götze to not only make up for that, but to thrive in a team that's maybe not functioning as well.
Mm-hmm.
If he was playing in the Dortmund team of last season, he'd probably be doing fantastically well because he'd have everything on the plate for him. But what you're really asking him there is to basically, you know, almost drag Dortmund
I think he can.
Forward.
I think he can. That's why it's a 50-50.
Yeah, it's 50-50.
Yeah.
All right, so Stefan, what about your 50-50? You're the let's crank it up a notch for you too. What's your 50-50 prediction?
I'm going to say Mainz are going to get dragged into the relegation race.
I was thinking about that one too.
Man.
It breaks my heart.
No.
But make your case.
You're in a similar thing today.
Yeah.
So the most obvious thing is that they sold Yunus Malí, who we talked about in the show last week with Sophie and Ali, about how it was clear he wanted to go. This offer came and I kind of theorised that it's an odd time for him to go, but it seemed from what's been reported that he just took off.
Yeah.
He didn't really say bye to anyone properly. I think Ali said that he read in Kicker or something that he simply texted everyone saying, bye, I'm off, you know, and he's now off to Wolfsburg. And even though, you know, he's obviously been shrugging around waiting, I think he seems to have been in a bit of a huff since that Dortmund deal didn't go through. He has scored 6 goals and 6 assists this season.
Yeah, he's one of the leading scorers in the Bundesliga.
Yeah,
we talked about that last week.
Which is nuts. That's absolutely crazy. And when you consider that Mainz already have a shocking defence, they've got the third worst defence in the league.
Yeah. Granted, I want to make a caveat there, because that also was while Andre Marmario was hurt.
Yeah.
And now that he's back, they've actually improved, I think, a significant amount. But continue, sorry.
Well, I just think that even though Mainz haven't been doing too well this season, they've still been okay. I think he's been making up a lot for that really poor defence. He's gone now. I don't really know who's going to replace him there in that team.
Yeah.
And the team is just like really interesting. There's something going on at Mainz. I mean, I think Martin, we were all heralding Schmidt last season, saying, you know, he's this next big thing. I mean, that game again in Belgium, the Anderlecht game, is one that really sticks in my mind, where things are just like, I don't know. There's something going on there. I think they've lost the guy scoring the goals. They're shipping goals for fun.
They lost their captain last year too.
Yeah. And I just don't see anything happening for them. And I think there's a lot of teams in the Bundesliga that are going to push past them. So, anyway, that's what I think.
Yeah, I think that's a fair argument. Yeah, I mean,
it breaks your heart.
It really does.
He had mine 6 at the beginning of the season.
It would be really, sorry to jump in, but it would be really heartbreaking the season that after Christian Heidel left that they get relegated, you know?
Because
he spent so long and so much time
trying to stabilise
the Bundesliga
club. I mean, the interesting thing is, I mean, when I spoke to Christian Heidel a few years ago, he said, even though when they were qualifying for Europe, he was like, our objective is to finish outside of the relegation zone, and then we'll take it from there. So, it is still a very small club, and they still really have punched above their weight over the last few years. And like you say, when you take out 2 players of that quality, they're going to really struggle. And the Anderlecht game for me as well was a kind of,
that
was like a real kind of seminal moment where I thought, something isn't right there. Don't get me wrong, I think the player they brought in from Karlsruhe, Dusan Svenko, a top talent.
Yeah.
I spoke to one of our compatriots who's on the coaching staff there, and he said this guy is fantastic, but is he going to be able to hit the ground running quickly enough to replace a guy like Yunus Malí? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, I mean, okay, relegation would be a bad thing for Mainz, but I don't think it would be the end of the world, because traditionally they are not a Bundesliga club. So even if they were to stabilise and come back up within a year, i.e. like Freiburg, I mean, if you actually look at the two clubs, Freiburg and Mainz are probably a good comparison to each other. Similar size clubs. Mainz have really pushed to get a new stadium, which has really helped them economically. Freiburg are still trying to do that, hopefully in the next few years. But both teams have a really good youth setup, probably 2 of the most underrated setups in the country.
Yeah.
2 very good trainers, 2 very good sporting directors. Now, even if Mainz go down, they seem to have the kind of structure in place where they could bounce back right away.
Yeah.
So I don't think it would be a disaster. I don't think there'll be this outpouring of criticism.
No, it won't be.
It'll be a case of, okay, you did really well for the last 3 or 4 years to stay in the Bundesliga for that amount of time. To get into Europe was just a phenomenal achievement. So I think you may be right. I think that's a fair point.
Yeah. Spot on, as always. It's 50-50. Let's look at the table again real quickly, because obviously that provides all the context that we really need when we do something like this.
How quick is your Wi-Fi or data?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying really hard to make it look cool, to make it look cool for the camera, but it's not working.
The defense, though, is a real concern, because in the last few years, the one kind of cornerstone of the team has been this kind of spine that they've had with Karius, with Bunga and Bell, with Baumgartlinger. You know, they've lost a lot of those players. You know, Baumgartlinger's gone to Leverkusen, Karius has gone to Liverpool. Bunga and Bell were two pretty kind of average defenders, but they worked well within the collective system. Now there's been injuries, there's been niggles with the European form, and the European form might actually come back to bite them in the ass because you know, they've had so many games and they've not picked up points. Who knows? It could go the other way, either way, and they could stay up. But I think that's a pretty good shout, actually.
Yeah, Mainz in the table right now are 10th. They're on 20 points, and in an interview with Bild, Ruven Schröder, their new sporting director, wants them to finish in the wants to finish with 40 points.
How many points do they have?
They have 20 right now. So they have 20 points right now and 10th, and he wants to finish with 40.
Games. So we're not even at the halfway point. We're one game behind the halfway
point. 18 games.
He's basically suggesting he wants a repeat of what's happened the first season, which I think is a really volatile hope.
Tough.
I mean, they've had such an up and down season.
If you look at the table as well, underneath them, there's Schalke, Wolfsburg,
Augsburg are another team. I don't want to jump in anyone's prediction, but Augsburg are another one who could...
They're one. I was thinking about a prediction for that, but they're one that I think could go either way.
It's a wonderful thing about the Bundesliga.
Yeah. My prediction is a little bit more outside of the box. I don't know if it's one that people really care about, but I think that Freiburg's three forwards, Niels Pedersen, Florian Niederlechner, and Maximilian Philipp, they're all going to finish with 10 goals. They all have 5 right now through 16 games.
What about Vincenzo Grifo?
Vincenzo Grifo is the...
What's he got now?
He's got right now, if I'm looking it up right now, I'm looking, trying to look cool doing it. He has less, but I think he's more... He's definitely more
the assist man, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the one that... He's the playmaker in that team. And I think one of the reasons why that they will all three of them will get 10 goals on the season is actually because Vincenzo Grifo is in... the team. Where are you, Vincenzo Grifo? On my computer. This is really bad air. He has 3 goals in the season in 16 games. So he's obviously one of their big players as well. But I think that, and I think that's all down to Christian Streich, that he's used all 3 of those players the right way. Because Florian Niederlechner is more, he's more a guy that's a little bit more energetic. Niels Pedersen obviously is the big, tall set piece guy. And Maximilian Philipp is the electric young talent. And I think that all 3 of them could conceivably finish with double-digit goals. So that is my outside-the-box prediction.
I tipped them to finish top half, so I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I think I'm trying to remember the old Freiburg team before they got relegated, and it had...
Max Kruse was it.
He went to Wolfsburg, what's his name?
Caligiuri.
Yeah. Like he's used to obviously having these really dynamic front threes, and that obviously is something that kind of works with that. The Freiburg are a really compact team. I really like Freiburg.
Yeah,
I can't really disagree with that. But I mean, if you have three players on 10 goals, you're doing well.
They have 5. All 3 of them have 5 right now through 16 games. So they have 18 games each of them to get 5 more. I think that's it's not really likely that happens. But Freiburg is actually one of the best attacking teams.
They could
conceivably finish as like a top 5 attacking team, because they're right now they're on par with Cologne. But granted, Cologne have 1 goal scorer, and Freiburg have 3.
Yeah.
So
it's really interesting, because last season, remember, was constantly talking about how the Bundesliga was so lacking in genuine strikers. You know, I mean, well, sounds silly to think of that, because you've got like Lewandowski, Chicharito, Aubameyang and stuff, but like down the league tables, like especially German strikers, and then Freiburg come up and they've got these 3 really good forwards. You know, I mean, I know Niels Pedersen is what he is. You know, he's not going
to... Hey, he got a call to the Olympics when a bunch of other more qualified people did not, you know, and I think that's because Löw needed a striker, and he wanted to see what Pedersen could offer on an international scale. But I don't know. I mean, maybe it was just a gimme because he scored This funny thing is Peterson has scored so many goals in the second division. He's clearly a second division striker.
Yeah. Ooh, I don't know. I mean, I think he's Lord Bundesliga, perhaps.
Well, they have this term in baseball.
Can you imagine if Darmstadt needed a striker?
Yeah. I think that would be one of the kind of transfers that could help a team like Darmstadt, not like Sydney Sam, that one of our Deutsche Welle colleagues said that it was going to be the savior of Darmstadt, which I thought was hilarious. Yeah. But
I think you need to have a variation of attacking players. Yeah. And I think Freiburg's very interesting because Strike, from what I understand, is not a great coach, hands-on. He's not a great, like, technical coach. But his ability to man-manage players and to create a real kind of collective spirit is fantastic. I mean, if you look at Çağlar Söyüncü, the Turkish defender they brought in, didn't speak English, didn't speak German, but yet he was still integrated into that team.
I know that 20-year-old.
I know that he's had some harsh games where he's really been taught a lesson, but there's a boy there who is a real world-class defender in the making, and I think that's all down to Strike embedding him into that kind of team spirit. And their home games are going to be so important because with the fans behind them, the whole kind of, you know, obviously the romance of Freiburg at home. I just see with Bayern tomorrow and with Bayern the last time they played them, they're a really difficult team to play at home.
Yeah, I think Strike, perhaps especially since Klopp left, is one of the few, probably the best coach in the Bundesliga for embodying the club that he coaches, because there's this thing about Freiburg that don't really seem to get scared, they don't seem to get nervous about things the same way like relegation teams would, because the club know if they get relegated, I mean, sure, it's not great, but it's going to be cool, you know?
Yeah.
Because he went down and he's came back up and everyone's just kind of getting on with things. And I mean, God, compared to like what happens in like, you know, Spain or England, when a team are like even considering the thought of relegation, it's panic zones. But with Freiburg, because they don't panic because they've got Strike, it's like they can actually, they've got that freedom just to go off and do things, you know.
It's like the majority of Strike's press conferences are just like talking about politics. It's like, even though they maybe get relegated or maybe struggling, it's like, so what do you think about refugees in Germany?
And he's very good on that as well. So he's a very admirable man. I can't argue. We're gonna have to start fighting.
I think this last round is where we're gonna kick it up to notch 11.
I think I peaked too early.
So I think we're gonna turn it up to notch 11. This is one we're really sticking our necks out for.
Yeah, I think Hoffenheim are gonna qualify for the Champions League.
Not to knock on your prediction, but hold on.
If Bayern, Leipzig, Hoffenheim qualify for the Champions League, then Dortmund, Schalke, or Leverkusen aren't. I mean,
Leverkusen and Schalke are already in the middle of the table.
But the table doesn't matter now. For Schalke not to qualify for the Champions League,
when you're 20 points behind.
I think that's a huge.
Who do you kick out then? Because right now you've got Bayern.
Leipzig, and Hertha are the top three.
And in who's fourth?
Frankfurt's fourth.
Frankfurt, of course, yeah.
Hertha.
You think Frankfurt are going to finish fourth then?
Yeah.
And Leipzig third.
Or and Hertha is going to finish first. in the Europa League.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. I think people went a little overboard on Hoffenheim. I actually was just having this discussion on Twitter before we came on with a couple of guys.
We've got to turn it up a notch here, haven't we?
No, it's everyone's going on about how Hoffenheim are the last remaining unbeaten team, and people are going on as if like they're winning games left, right and centre. They've got about like 6 wins and 10 draws, I think. That's 20 points dropped. Do you know what I mean? Now, that's fine for Hoffenheim, and they're obviously sitting...
Yeah, that's the other way of looking at their unbeaten record.
That's
yeah,
of course. A negative way of looking at
no,
it.
No, but it's a realistic way of looking at it, because you got to bear in mind that, they're unbeaten, but they're also, more often than not, is 1 point they're picking up rather than 3, which is fine if you're a team in the top half or a team you want to finish mid-table. I mean, even if Hoffenheim were to slip down and finish 6th or 7th, 8th, still done remarkably well considering like the situation that Nagelsmann picked the club up on. But I mean, their form is going to have to drastically improve, I think, for them to push up into the top 4, because
I think they're capable of doing that, though. I mean, I think that, I mean, another half of the season with Sandro Wagner and Andrew Kummers playing together.
I'm saying the possibility.
They'd have to.
I'm actually bullish on Kerem Demirbay too. As a midfielder. I mean, I think it's conceivable too. It's a very interesting way of. There's always one team in the Bundesliga that has like double digit draws by like the halfway point. And it's just weird that it's one of the teams in the top half of the table. Usually it's a team that's in the relegation zone that can't like.
I mean, I think you could actually make a very good argument about Frankfurt as well, qualifying for the Champions League, like in terms of either the third, because I think they have a real substance about them. My concern with Hertha, I think, is if you take one play out, does it really? It must affect the whole collective context.
Yeah, they're very top.
They're really like on the precipice.
And Paul Dardai seems to be quite rigid with his formations.
Yeah, whereas with Frankfurt, there's a real intensity about that team. They are really they go out there and they're so aggressive every game. Defensively, I think statistically they are kind of one of the best defensive teams in the Bundesliga in terms of like how much shots you give away. So I think
that's because they've got Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Wait, what's his name again?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
They got him as a coach, so I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it?
So I mean,
you have to revert on the execution, man.
For God's name.
So I mean, if Hoffenheim or Frankfurt qualify to the Champions League, then that means that Schalke, Leverkusen, possibly Dortmund won.
But here's the thing, though: they're not going to stay undefeated for the rest of the season, right?
Agreed.
So that means those 10 draws that they picked up in the first half of the season, they're going to turn into wins, or they're going to turn into losses, in my opinion, right? And I think it's more likely they can turn into losses. But if they keep drawing games, this is a thing that you have to consider, which is also going to be something that it's going to factor into my argument I'm about to make with my point. You have to consider that there's Leverkusen and Schalke coming over the hill. I think they really are, right?
I think Leverkusen will.
Well, I do, right? I do. But that's just... Anyway, fine, just Schalke then. Even just Schalke, right? I think And then...
Oh my God, you get one Chicharito scoop and you're just on the Leverkusen bandwagon.
Oh, surely you'd be the one I'd be the one arguing that they're buggered if I'm the one saying he's off. But I think... totally lost my train of thought about it. No, but yeah, so I think I didn't think Hoffenheim looked as good going towards the end of the first half of the season. They really were dropping stupid points rather than just, I can't think of the fixture, but I remember watching, you know, the fixtures every single weekend thinking Hoffenheim aren't playing anywhere near as well as they were playing. And I don't know, I just, you're right, they do have a really good squad, they do have talented players throughout the team, but I'm just really guarded when people say, oh my God, Hoffenheim, they're undefeated, and I'm like, yeah, but it's 10 draws.
I'm not really getting kind of caught up in that. I totally understand what you're saying. I just think, I mean, if you rewind back to a year ago where Hertha had a great start to the season and they fell away, I'm just not sure that's going to happen this year. I think tactically Hertha, Cologne, Frankfurt and Hoffenheim are really, really good. And I'm not sure in an attacking sense a lot of the other teams are good enough to break that down. You mentioned Leverkusen. I just don't think they're going to do it. They've got some really, really good players, but those good players that we're talking about, Chicharito, Julian Brandt, they haven't really done very well this season, and I don't think there's a good rapport between the players and the manager. I'd be very worried if I was a Leverkusen fan. I don't think they're going to finish lower than bottom half, but I don't think they're going to get to Europe.
Yeah, I mean, when I mention Schalke and Leverkusen, I don't really say they're both going to be third and fourth. I just mean I think they're both going to be better than they were in the first half of the season, which means more points off here and there.
What would Schalke have to make up to get into the top four? They would have to make up
about 10 points, I think, 8 points.
Yeah, also, I mean, you have to look at Hoffenheim. Their first game, technically the real second half of the season, is against Leipzig on the road. Or on the road, sorry, away from home. That's an Americanism. Away from home.
They lose that game, unbeaten, run, the bubbles burst, and then straight down.
I mean, eventually that's going to cut. That's going to be a huge moment for the team I mean, I think if they lose a game, it's going to be fascinating to see how they bounce back. That's a real test for Nagelsmann, how he manages the players. But I think there's a real maturity about the squad. Say what you like about Sandro Wagner, Kevin Vogt, all these kind of guys, Hubner, Zola, you know, they've all been there and done it. I want to say like a kind of snidiness about them. It's not even a word, is it? Snidiness. But they've got like a little nasty streak about them, you know. They can play good football, but when they have to, they can rough it up, as Dortmund would have, you know, mm-hmm. seen in that game. I think they've got a really nice balance there, and yeah, I think they've got a good chance of finishing top four. Don't get me wrong, you could substitute Hoffenheim for Frankfurt, I think, just as much. Hertha.
Oh, I don't know of that, but that, but let's just stay on Hoffenheim for now. Let's not open.
Oh, I did say it's ballsy, isn't it? And yeah. I did say that Frankfurt would be in the top four as well. But I think. I know that this would kind of fit what your agenda here.
My agenda.
Yeah, I think for all that Nagelsmann is getting a lot of credit, I think Niko Kovac deserves a huge amount of credit. Yeah. He's not getting anywhere near him.
Yeah, he's probably got nowhere near the same budget either. As well. I mean, that Hoffenheim team is much more expensive than Frankfurt one across the board.
Yeah.
Before we move on, one minor point is. Which is just a thing about Hoffenheim. I'm really excited or really interested to keep an eye on Rudi and Niklas Süle.
I was thinking about that too.
The rest of the season, whether their performances begin to dip because they get complacent, because like I can't wait for this big payout in the summer to move on, or if they're going to be like, I've earned my move, pressure's off, I can play my football. So, or they might just continue to bubble.
We had a big conversation about that on Sunday about a bunch of other players. So, if you want to listen to that podcast, just download the last podcast.
The transfers and stuff.
You know, players and they're about to make their moves. How do they act? So, Stefan, you're out on the limb prediction.
Well, I actually made an out on the limb prediction, unlike Ross, which I think that was a pretty easy prediction, to be honest. Yeah, I do actually. Hoffenheim finished fourth. They're fifth right now. They're fifth.
No, I said they finished third.
You said top four.
I said.
All right,
I said Bayern, Leipzig, Hoffenheim, Frankfurt.
Well, you know who I don't think will finish top four? Dortmund.
Just
waiting for a glass to drop.
Yeah, I think all the Dortmund fans are just that are listening to this want to saw off that branch that you just wandered out onto.
Yeah, after on Sunday going on a massive rant about Vosca, I'm now going to suggest they're not going to finish top four, which is kind of partly because in the last episodes, Sophie and Ali were absolutely adamant they're going to finish top four. Now, these are just predictions, right? I'm not saying they won't finish in the top four. I'm just saying I think it's a good possibility they won't. And let me give you my reasons. Injuries. They get so many bloody injuries. I don't know if there's any team like them. They get so many injuries. And everyone was saying, we're going to go into the winter break. They're going to heal. They're going to be good. They're going to come back nice and fresh. Thomas Tuchel did that interview with Rafa Honigstein saying, you know, we're not buying any players. We're spending our time trying to, you know, consolidate and make everyone play a bit better. What happens? Socrates injured, Royce injured, Dembele injured, Bender injured, Berkey injured, and of course Aubameyang's not back till after about four games in, I think. This is a constant problem with Dortmund. You can't... The entire first half of their season was perhaps dominated by the fact that there were constant injuries. Tuchel was constantly having a bit of a team around. I don't see that changing. People are saying, yeah, you know what, they've got this winter break, that means they can... you know, fix things and players can heal. Ross is right.
Direct all abuse here.
Yes. Exactly.
Nothing's changed though, and it's really key players. Like Bender's out for a long time. Thomas Tuchel in that interview with Rafa was really excited about Bender coming back. He thinks he's a really key player. No, he's out.
No,
he's out. Royce is meant to be back. He's now out for a little longer.
He was in training earlier this week, but he's
Socrates. Also, I think is probably their only decent defender.
Yes.
You know?
That was the one that I was going to mention, Socrates.
The point I made on the transfer podcast we did on Sunday was, why the hell aren't Dortmund signing any players? Because they absolutely need another defender. They need at least probably need cover for Castro. They need cover for Weigl. Weigl looks absolutely exhausted.
Yeah, because he has to play all the time.
Yeah, this guy's pulling the strings for a team that doesn't even know where it's going right now, right? So, anyway, that's my point. That's point number one. Like in terms of personnel, I don't think anything's going to change. I think it's going to be Tuchel, you know, mixing and matching every week, trying to cover holes across the team, and that's how they drop points. They drop so many points. Okay, my other point is Champions League games, they always drop points. In the three games, in the six Champions League games that they played, the group stage games, they lost three of them, right?
They dropped points in three of them.
And the three games that they won were against Mainz, Darmstadt, and Hamburg. Okay, three teams that were absolutely hopeless. Dortmund are going to have more Champions League games. I think they're going to drop more points.
Hold on a second, because that's not necessarily true. Because it's not, they don't get more if they make it to the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. That that's when it really starts to kick up a notch. But I mean, this round of 16, they have that week in between, so I don't know if that's...
Oh, so a week in between what? Between the last 16 and the Bundesliga?
No, because they have... Well, we have the round of 16 because, remember, they have 2 weeks of each leg, whereas in the quarterfinals, in the semifinals, you have a week of each leg.
Yeah, but I mean, the group stages are what, 2 weeks apart? Games?
No, 2 weeks apart.
The point I'm making is, even, whenever Dortmund have a game on a Tuesday or a Wednesday and then a game on a Saturday or Sunday, half the time they drop points unless it's against a really crap team. That's the pattern we've seen this season. Now that's a really minor point, right? I get it, that's a really minor point. The other main one as well is the fact that for them to get into the top four, too many things have to work in their favour. You just mentioned Hoffenheim. You said Hoffenheim are solid. I'm willing to give you the benefit that they are solid. I don't think they're going to finish the top four, but right now they're above Dortmund.
They're still above, they're not in the top four now, and they're still above Dortmund.
Yeah. Top four. So Bayern Leipzig.
Hold on, right? No, the point. Stop Bayern Leipzig. Oh no, you're Bayern Leipzig. Sorry, Bayern Leipzig.
Dude, what are you trying to do here?
Hold on,
just let him finish his point.
I hadn't even thought about that. Right, that's another prediction I'm not willing to make. So you have Hoffenheim, who I think are doing just as well. I don't think they're going to finish top four either, perhaps, but they've got just as much. They look better actually than Dortmund do right now, and they're 1 point above them. Frankfurt looks solid. You said Hertha looks solid. Leipzig and Bayern aren't going anywhere, and I also think Schalke and Leverkusen are going to start pushing up there. There's every chance Wolfsburg can also start pushing up. Wolfsburg are nowhere near the top four, of course. But what I mean is that you've got three teams there who are probably going to be taking more points off everyone else than they did in the first half of the season. So it's not as if Dortmund are sitting in sixth place and thinking we've got four rubber ducks in front of us here.
No.
You know, they've got four teams who all have to completely capitulate. No, three teams that all have to capitulate for them to finish the top four.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that's going to happen. I think it's more likely that Dortmund, who are also in the Champions League, are going to drop points and constantly struggle with injuries, are going to drop more points than the likes of Frankfurt, Hoffenheim, maybe Hertha Berlin.
I was actually... I'm going to change my prediction because we decided off-air that you were doing a Dortmund one, so I'm going to not do a Dortmund one.
Okay.
But the one that I was going to make, which is that... they're not going to win until Aubameyang comes back.
I mean, they've got some hard games. I mean, they've got Leipzig to
exactly
win.
I completely forgot one. They're selling Adrian Ramos. Why the hell are they selling Adrian Ramos?
Yeah,
I don't care.
Because exactly, they sold Adrian Ramos, you know. And now I'm not making this call also because their first game is against Werder Bremen, who you picked to go down. So I mean, that could just throw my prediction way like right out the window immediately. But I mean, they're not as... I mean, even they started slow last season after the winter break, even with Aubameyang in the team.
Yep.
You know, and if you look at the games, I looked at the games this season that Aubameyang was missing.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was against Darmstadt, and I think there's another big game against Legia Warsaw, which I mean, if you beat those teams, kudos to you. But They're not real teams, you know.
Oh, come on! That's tough.
So
Legia Warsaw beat
Legia Warsaw. Come on!
No, they didn't beat Real Madrid.
Oh no, they drew.
They drew with Real Madrid.
Yeah, you can't say Legia Warsaw not a team. Come on.
But they still allowed four goals. They scored eight goals against Legia Warsaw.
Because they're not a franchise.
And they still allowed four goals.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, let's not get bogged down on Legia Warsaw.
Yeah. Okay. But anyways, my point was, the games that Aubameyang has missed, they have not performed. I mean, especially in the cup, they almost lost to Union Berlin in the cup when Aubameyang was not there.
Yeah.
You know, this team, especially since now that they don't even have a striker, a quote unquote striker. I mean, maybe Dembele is going to play up there, maybe Götze is going to play up there, but that they got rid of their only other striker that they have that's not named Pierre McAvermont.
I'd be surprised if they didn't sign a striker in January, just even as a loan or a
Dortmund.
Yeah, I mean, if they've lost Ramos, I just don't see any other solution.
That's really
I just can't see any other solution. They must be looking at it, even going, okay, let's just get a bog standard Bundesliga striker just to fill a gap, because
this Ramos situation really annoys me, actually, because it fits in entirely with what I said in the show last week about how Vasquez sees money, he sells, he doesn't even think twice about it. And this
I think the player as well, I
don't really care if Tuchel surely sits him down and says, grow up, we got a campaign to play here, you're my only other striker. And he's been playing games. He played the entire game against Bayern Munich, and he was fantastic. I think he's been really decent this season, actually.
I'm
not sure he's that good.
He's also been
playing wide as well all the time.
Yeah.
Playing really well wide, I think.
Yeah.
Different playing centre forward though.
He's still a striker though, you know, who can play as a forward, and I think he's been decent when he's playing. I think Tuchel plays him really well out wide, and he is the old Hudik. And then people, I mean, I made this point on Twitter, and like folk like, yeah, well, I think he wants to play Sherlock up front. Why the hell would he want to play if I'm a Dortmund fan thinking I can't wait for the next half of the season, someone's telling me for the first three or four games Andrew Sherlock's playing up front, I'm like, you know what, I give up.
To be honest, I actually kind of agree with what you're saying there. It pains me to say it, but
Ross, people tune into the show for you to scream at me.
Yeah,
but well, Sophie did enough of that in the last show.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like, he did that job. She did a good enough job.
But so. I think it'd be interesting to see how they manage the Champions League and the Bundesliga together, because I think if Tuchel can get his best team out in Champions League games, I think he could do actually really, really well. Like, I mean, I'm not sure. That's the thing about European football this season. I'm not sure there's like one team that's like they're going to win the Champions League. If Dortmund can keep their teams together,
do you know what I could? Do you know what I could totally see Dortmund doing? Reaching the final, and finishing fifth. That'd be the most Dortmund thing in the world.
Do you know what? It might even be worth prioritising those games, because right now,
well, if they win the Champions League, they get back into it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's easier than trying to finish top four.
See, with Schalke as well, of course, if they win the Europa League, then they get right into the Champions League.
And we'll have a Riviera Derby Super Cup.
I agree with you. I just think.
So you're also. So Ross also thinks they're finishing inside the top four, so write your own name down there for the abuse as well.
Well, at least I gave my top four for a reason, And no, I think. Come back to your point. I think as we talked about at the beginning of the season, strength and depth is a huge problem. And I think just given the amount of changes that Tuchel makes to his team, it's so hard to get players who have that kind of understanding with each other. Just because you get so many players coming in and out of the team, and I think, you know, when you're playing, for example, I think actually a really big example of this was against Frankfurt. When they went there expecting, you know, we'll get 3 points, we'll change a few players around, be fine. The team had no cohesion together. You look at a guy like Sebastian Rode coming in. Now, Rode is an average Bundesliga player. He's not the guy that Dortmund come in and replace those players. So when they don't have Guerrero and they don't have Götze and they don't have...
They're still top-heavy for a team that signed a bunch of people.
Especially without Aubameyang. I can understand why Ramos did leave. I'm not falling into this trap of why players are going to China. It's pretty obvious, I think, to anyone. But I think Dortmund needs to sign a striker. Even if it's a short term decision, if it's a 4 or 5 million striker, like a Julian Schieber that they signed, you know, 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, we saw Schalke sign, who's just facing Nuremberg.
Yeah,
who's just like a really, really good, solid Bundesliga player. Yeah.
I think that's what Dortmund might need to do. Someone like David Selke, for example.
Just drop 15 million on Max Phillip and see what happens.
May have to. But realistically, Aubameyang is going to leave probably in the summer.
Well, yeah, well, Sophie
so
said
David Selke is taking a step down to go to Borussia Dortmund.
So
maybe they bought Timo Werner, there we go. Or Oliver Burke.
Yeah.
So that's just a really kind of wider point, that if Aubameyang is probably going to go in the summer, what are they going to do? They're just going to sign a striker in the summer and expect him to score 25 goals?
Just before you get going, it's a good comparison to make with Leipzig. Leipzig have like 3 or 4 guys who can step in when they have to. And it's depth that wins you championships. It's depth that gets you through championships. Dortmund just don't seem to have that. Which is why I said they have to sign players in January.
That's
my point.
Anyways, that's obviously the English approach is to just finish. So my final prediction is one that I know that Ross Dunbar is not going to like. I just spoiled everything. Thomas Müller is going to lead the Bundesliga in goals in the second half of the season. From this point on until the end of the season.
Thank you.
That Thomas Müller is going to lead the lead.
How many goals has he got to score to do that?
He's not going to lead the entire scoring leaders.
Oh, he's going to score more.
And than anyone else from this point until the end of the season.
I don't really care.
Why?
Bayern Munich.
Why?
I'm asking him, not you.
I think Ancelotti. If you pay attention to the way that Ancelotti has played his teams in the winter break, he's really gone away from that 4-3-3 and trying to He said in an interview also with ESPN with Gabriel Marcotti that he was trying to use Thomas Muller on the wing to use his intelligence, and obviously he doesn't expect Thomas Muller to play the wing position the same way that Arjen Robben does. But it was completely clear that when he played in the middle behind Lewandowski, that he was markedly better. And I think that that is just too obvious for him to ignore. I mean, he says he's not a stupid coach, and I don't think he's a stupid coach. I think he realized that, and he's always a coach. We've said this on the podcast. He's a coach that likes to put the players in the best situation. And I think that he's figured out, finally, that Thomas Muller does not belong on the right side anymore. He belongs in behind Lewandowski, and he'll play in some kind of 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, whatever number you want to throw out there. Mm-hmm. And Thomas Muller is going to put on his scoring boots again.
So let's say that the change of formation is to 4-4-2, which I'm not really that sure about, but okay, I take your point. Who drops out of midfield?
Well, it would be probably Xabi Alonso or someone.
No, you can't drop Xabi Alonso, no.
Well, you could drop, first of all, Thiago and Vidal are both injured right now. Now Vidal could, Ancelotti said Vidal could play on Saturday. That's the short term view.
Sure.
And Vidal is, I mean, he plays with a broken leg probably.
Yeah.
So he'll probably be back in the mix. But I mean, are you really going to try to make a spot for Renato Sanchez? Are you really going to try really hard to make a spot?
It's been 35 million.
Yeah, true. But he's not going to. He's a rotation player. He's not going to be somebody who's going to be challenging Thomas Muller for a spot in the team. If Thomas Muller is on form, which I think he will be on form at least the beginning of the second half of the season, he's going to earn his playing time.
I'm not sure Ancelotti is going to change from 4-3-3 though in competitive games, because he's always played 4-3-3.
No, he hasn't. In the Champions League final against Atletico Madrid, he played a 4-4-2.
Ancelotti's always played 4-3-3. Just because of the balance of the team. I get what you're saying. I'm not trying to argue because it's Thomas Muller, and I have faith in Aston, but...
you do.
Yeah, but I don't see how you can drop... Okay, let's say everyone's fit. You can't drop Thiago because he's been your best player.
Of course not.
You can't drop Xabi Alonso because he's the axis of the team.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
But if you want to make that point, fine. But I don't agree with that. I think there's been many times where, even under Pep Guardiola, where Arturo Vidal and Thiago were playing in midfield next to each other, and that was part of Bayern's best team, was with Xabi Alonso not in the team.
Yeah, I
disagree with that.
I'm not a huge fan of Alonso. As a current player, I think he has lost what little pace he had. I think retiring this summer is exactly what he should do. And I know what you're saying. I think a 4-4-2 works. You stick Kimmich in there with Thiago, and then things probably do start.
What happens to Vidal then?
Oh, we'll move them. I think Vidal, when he's fit, then, and Kimmich can play right back or something. I don't know. But I mean, Kimmich has actually had to play around the pitch all season. He's the one player who probably hasn't really fitted in. But I mean, Ancelotti has had to change things from a 4-3-3 to a 4-2-3-1. That's obvious because it just wasn't working.
Sure.
I do wonder if he'll move back to the 4-4-3 for the Champions League, in which case we'll maybe wonder. Maybe Thomas Muller will end up playing as a sort of like an impact sub coming on and stuff. But it's interesting to see. The interesting thing is, you see.
But let me make that point. He could go back to a 4-3-3 in the Champions League.
Mm.
But I'm saying Thomas Muller is going to lead the Bundesliga from this point forward, from match day 16 until the end of the season, in goals scored.
In Bundesliga goals. But here's the thing though, the interesting point that you made was that, like, who drops out of midfield. But like, I was actually going to agree with Muller's. I think Muller's really important for Bayern because he can take up a midfield role, because Thiago doesn't actually have a player in the squad who can do what he does when he's not on the team. Mm-hmm. Bayern don't actually have a number 10 at all, and except really Thomas Muller, who isn't even
Thiago would be a good number 10.
Yeah, he is. But the thing is, yeah, you think on paper, you're like, yeah, Thiago is a 10, but he tends to actually sit back. He doesn't really move forward. He's like a deep line playmaker, I guess, mm-hmm. or like a quarterback, I guess, maybe, right?
You could play the role that Toni Kroos did.
Hmm.
and when Bayern Munich won the treble, which is right behind. I mean, Müller was out on the wing, and Toni Kroos was in that number 10 role in that 4-2-3-1. Thiago could definitely play that role. Mm. But I also think that Thiago, like you said, likes to go back deeper, I think, than Toni Kroos did while he was at Bayern Munich. So I think that Thiago is actually more of an 8 than a 10, like you said.
Yeah,
I think that he could play with a 6 next to him, or he could play with a number 8, which I think is Vidal is.
Mm.
And what Thomas Müller is really good at is he's good at filling the gaps. He's a really smart player. He can be in the right position at the right time. He works really darn hard, and he can win a couple balls up, pressing, basically pressing.
Mm.
And I think he's actually he's an underrated transition player.
Mm.
I think he's. I mean, you see some of the goals that he scores in big finals, like it. And he's basically running past other players.
He gallops
pretty darn well. So he's a great transition player. If you have that alongside Lewandowski, those two together in the middle is the best combination that Bayern have. That was true last season, and I think that was even true the season before.
Yeah.
And I think Ancelotti now realizes that he can use Ribery and Robin next to them, and Thomas Müller is going to play more in the middle, and therefore he's going to lead the Bundesliga from match day 16 to the end of the season in goals scored.
I don't really disagree with anything you're saying. I just think Lewandowski and Aubameyang are going to score more, to be honest with you.
Well, no, okay. Oh, you mean more from this point?
Yeah, I think Aubameyang's probably having maybe. Consider the circumstances.
Well, Aubameyang is not going to come back until February.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, he's going to miss 4 games. So that's
too.
Cameo. Yeah, I'll give you that. But Aubameyang, I think he's playing one of his most mature, really important roles for Dortmund, because this is probably the first season, not the first season, but he's carrying a lot of weight for Dortmund right now, I think, with his goals. Lewandowski is just Lewandowski. I think if Bayern are playing well, and Thomas Müller is at a point where he's scoring goals, he's also going to be assisting goals for Lewandowski as well. And I think Lewandowski's the best striker in the world. So I can't see Müller scoring more goals than him, unless Dortmund Bayern get a shitload of penalties, I guess, in the second half of the season. But yeah, I can't.
Well,
actually,
Lewandowski's taking the penalties.
Is he? I thought it was Müller.
Müller hasn't done it, I think, for a while. But I think Lewandowski the last 2 times he's taken free kicks and he's taken penalties. So
all
that actually works against Thomas Müller.
Yeah. So again, I can't really disagree with what you're saying, but I just think. Just even a man in Bayern who will probably score more goals.
Yeah, but I mean, it's going out on a limb. I mean, maybe it's not a
quite right, Davis. At least we both did it.
Yeah,
I don't really think one of Bayern's strikers scoring the most goals is going out on a limb. I mean,
yeah, you're right. I'm not
true,
the only one.
Maybe,
now,
but
I'm
the fact that he scored one goal in the first 16.
That's because he's been gash, though.
Gash for people who aren't from Glasgow means rubbish.
Rubbish.
Yeah.
Well, no, hasn't been at his usual standards.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I'm just not sure about his role in the team. I'm not sure about it. 4-3-3. I don't see where he plays in an effective 4-3-3.
I think
if Ancelotti goes back to 4-3-3, then
banking. That's why it's bold.
Yeah.
I think because I'm banking that's not going to happen.
If you play 4-4-2, then you're weaker in midfield.
True, but Thomas Müller is.
And I don't think Ancelotti will sack.
But Thomas Müller makes up for the fact that you're weaker in midfield.
No, I don't think he does.
I think in the Bundesliga you can quite easily be able to midfielders, no problem at all. That's why I said in the Champions League you might stick with 4-3-3.
Yeah, but I'm talking Bundesliga goals.
I'm really interested to see with Thomas Müller is that I put a lot of his performance down to just sheer exhaustion, and I think he's had Christmas off, he's had the winter off, and I think a lot of people in Munich or at Bayern. I mean, I think he knows himself probably in his heart either he's. I mean, either he has been jaded and he needs a bit of rest, or there's something more serious going on,
mm-hmm.
or maybe he's just not getting on with the coach, or that he's not getting the system well.
Mm-hmm.
If he is tired, then he seems like the kind of player who we really sat down over the winter and made sure he got back into proper shape. So,
all right, so those are our predictions for the second half of the season. To recap, Werder Bremen is going to go down. What your second one was Hoffenheim. Were
no,
going
my second one. So Werder Bremen to go down, Mainz good to be top level, world class. And Hoffenheim to qualify for the Champions League.
And Stefan, what were yours?
Mine were Hamburg were going to stay well clear of the relegation zone. Mainz were going to get dragged into the relegation fight. And I also said that Dortmund will not finish in the top 4.
Okay, and I said that Cologne are going to finish outside the European spots, that Freiburg are going to have 3 goal scorers with 10 goals, and that Thomas Müller is going to lead the league in goals scored from matchday 16 to the end of the season. So if you want to say anything about those predictions, you want to say how daft we are, Stefan Biankowski is at S. Biankowski, Ross is at RossDunbar93, and I'm at Davis_VanOptorp. But you can also, if you just want to rant at Tribuna Podcast, you can do that as well. And also give your own predictions by writing to us at Tribuna Podcast. You can also check us out on Facebook, which is where we also post our material, not just on Audio Boom as we've been doing lately, but also make sure if you're going onto iTunes, please give us a rating, because that'll definitely help us grow this project that we're trying to do. And I hope the people that are on Twitter weren't completely bored that we just went over an hour here, but hopefully you were able to tune in and out.